Good evening. This is Patty Kostelic, and I'm here in the studio with two quilters. And this is very exciting to me. Quilting is one of my real interests, although I don't do any. I have the president of the Cabin Fever Quilters, Lori Rockstead, and the vice president, Mary Beth Smetzer, and we're going to be talking about quilting. I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas and that you're recovering or not recovering, if you had a relaxing one out there. I had a relaxing one, so I'm not recovering.
I'm looking forward to doing some quilting now that Christmas is over.
Was disruptive.
Very disruptive for getting other things done.
Disruptive for the more serious work. Quilting has enjoyed quite a resurgence here in the last few years, not just in Fairbanks, but nationally. Do either of you have any guesses or theories on why that is?
Well, I think part of it came about with the bicentennial.
Definitely.
But yeah. I think it's something that, you know, was just... I know for years I wanted to start quilting, and I wasn't a sewer or anything, and I bought lots of books, and vicariously I was a quilter. And for me, it really wasn't until 1980, which was very fairly late, yeah, that I actually took a class and then just went crazy.
Quilting has sort of had a... Renaissance in the 30s. It seems to have a cycle about every 40 years. Every 30 or 40 years, it has an upsurge again. And I think the bicentennial sort of shot it over the top this time, because it was slowly. Quilter's Newsletter, which is a national publication that every dedicated and dyed-in-the-wool quilter subscribes to, started, I think, in 1969. And their readership, you know, started building up, and the bicentennial just sort of really exploded the whole thing in a renewed interest in Americana all over the United States.
And now there's such a an industry, and there's like a, what do I want to call it, a network that I don't think it could ever fall below a certain level. Was it Jeff Gutchen was giving some figures of over $400 million worth of sales and quilting-type things and fabrics and stuff. There's a huge market there now.
Well, one thing that's very interesting is the reason given that Fairbanks doesn't have a lot of things is that we don't have a sufficiently large market to support them. But we, in fact, do have a store which caters primarily to quilters.
It definitely does.
And sections of other, you know, fabric stores and whatever that do, you know.
So that means that there are a lot of people, certainly in this community, that are spending a lot of time and attention on quilting. How many members do the Cabin Fever Quilters have?
Well, we have 55 to 60 right now. We're just getting up a new membership list because it's the beginning of a new year, so we're kind of, you know, I'm not quite sure how many.
And your club is open to beginners and experts?
It's open to anyone that's interested in quilt making or preserving quilts or anything about quilts. It's
even, you know, men.
Yes, we don't have any yet.
Now, I've been reading this book called The Quilters, Women in Domestic Art and Oral History. And there's a farmer in here who quilts with his wife, and she says it's so funny because when someone's coming up the drive, he scurries away from the quilting project that he's working on. He says he does not choose the colors. He doesn't do any of those things. He just does what she tells him.
Well, now there are a few men, you know, in the field that are quite renowned. Michael James is one. We're hoping that maybe we might get him to visit us up here for a workshop and such. And
he's really quite good.
Yeah, he was as an artist, had been a painter, I believe. But anyway, he's been a quilt maker for 10, 15 years at least. And he's really an outstanding example because he isn't just an artist who took up fabric. He really believes that you should know, you know, that the art of sewing and quilting, and then you can jump off and do, you know, beautiful design work and colors and things.
I think that probably men have had influence in quilting, you know, not dramatically so, but I think they have had, when you consider back 100, 150 years ago when people were mainly agrarian and living in isolated farms, and in the wintertime there wasn't that much for the man to do. Except, you know, keep the livestock and plan next year's planting. So quite often he was probably in the farmhouse with the farm wife, who was probably, that's the main time when she was making quilts. And I think some of the quilt names, the traditional quilt patterns, Probably some men were involved in the designing of them or made the templates. I'm sure they made lots of quilt frames. I have one made by my father, which I treasure.
But quilting has been undervalued as an art form, and I think that part of that is because it's been a women's mode of expression and because it had a utilitarian purpose, and we tend not to ascribe artistic value to things that are utilitarian. There's been a change in that over the recent years, but the traditional arts, women's arts, pottery has been a craft rather than an art, a quilt making. I saw a show, and I really can't remember the year, of an Amish quilt that were hung in a museum in New York, and they were extraordinary, and the colors were beautiful, and because of the setting, it was really clear that they're very much like modern paintings and, in fact, rivaled them and, in some cases, sort of surpassed them.
They were certainly precursors because they've been made for many years before modern painting evolved.
Yeah, the color combinations, for sure. I think we had talked about this earlier, that I think, you know, quilting really hasn't been valued as an art, and it really, I think it always has been. People often say, oh, well, it's just scraps, or I remember my mom picking through her scraps. But I think that a lot of people throughout all the years have bought fabric specially for a quilt to specially cut up and re-sew together and make one. And scrap quilts are important, and there are a lot of scrap quilts. But I think also from some of the quilts that you see in the 1800s, even in, and even the late 1700s here in the Americas, were Indian chintzes that were cut up, and the fabric was taxed and actually illegal to own in England. So they would take, you know, a small piece of fabric, cut out the flowers, and then put it on a, you know, a double-sized quilt. So they'd be taking a square yard and making it into a double-sized quilt because it was that prize. Now, you know, they bought fabric specially to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it really isn't an art, and how it's always been an art. But I think you're right. I think because it's a home art, a domestic art, that it hasn't been seen.
Yeah, and women weren't considered artists. Women weren't allowed to be artists for centuries. I'm sure that if men had, you know, needlework was something that a woman could easily do at home because she didn't get outside of the home much at all, the average woman. And so she created something of beauty within the home, and it was not valued.
Well, I think it's the same thing with tapestries, too. You know, people just consider they cover the walls. Today we look at tapestries and go, isn't that something? They didn't have those on the wall, they would have had cold, damp, stony walls. So, you know, it's the same thing. I think it was...
There's a real consciousness, you know, among the quilt community about women, this being a woman's art, and it's never been appreciated. And in fact, there was a book published a few years back called Anonymous Was a Woman. But because most of these beautiful quilts that have been, you know, passed down through families or have ended up in museum collections, most of them are unsigned. And there's very little known about the history of the maker, or if the maker is known, if it was signed. Very little is known about about the individual. But most of them are completely anonymous, and it's a shame because they are art forms, and today there's very large emphasis on signing your quilt. Mm-hmm. We reiterate it almost every month at our monthly meeting. Make sure that you sign and date your quilt just for historic purposes.
Well, because there is a difference between quilt makers. I mean, there's some people in reading this story, the quilters would say, well, so-and-so is just fantastic quilt maker, and some of the women, even they're, although they're very self-deprecating in some ways, in other ways, some of them say, well, I don't like to do group quilts because some people put in stitches that aren't as, you know, there's that.
Yeah, there's pride in their own individual.
Maybe we should back up a little bit. For those of our audience that aren't real familiar with quilts, there are a couple of different kinds of quilts. There are piece quilts and applique quilts and so on. Could you just talk a little bit about the different kinds of quilts and the parts of the quilt and maybe a little basic introduction of the steps?
Sure. Well, what I'm working on right now, which unfortunately cannot see. I don't know if you're fortunate or unfortunate, really, but...
Very unfortunate.
Unfortunate.
Because it's beautiful.
It's a pieced quilt. In fact, it's for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, which was yesterday, but the party's not till August, so I've got time. It's a piece quilt, and this is what most people commonly associate with quilting as a pieced quilt. But it's not the only quilt. There's also applique quilts. A pieced quilt is when you cut up little pieces of fabric and sew them all together again in a design. And people often ask you, why do you do that? But it's, I get great pleasure in piecing quilts. It's a very geometric type art form, depending on what you're doing. And quite often there's hundreds or even thousands of pieces in one quilt. And then you put it together into a textile sandwich or a fabric sandwich, you can call it. You have your pieced or appliqué top, your batting, and your backing. And you stretch it out on a frame, and there's a variety of different methods, or you can do it on a hoop, or you can just baste it and quilt it in your lap. And your actual quilting is the actual stitch that you use to hold these three layers together. That is quilting. What I'm doing is piecework. What Lori is doing right now, she's appliquing a handle to a little basket pattern, which is a combination of pieced and appliqué. But appliqué comes from a French word, appliqué,
yeah.
spelled differently, and it means to lay on. And it's one fabric on top of another that you sew on and into a design.
So your piecework, she has a little pieces that are sewn together at the edge, and what Lori's working on is she's sewing a red handle, what will be a handle of a basket, mm-hmm. on top of a little piece of blue-flowered material.
I'm applying something on top. I think that's the right applique. Yeah.
And some quilts are very elaborately quilted with very elaborate patterns in the mm-hmm. stitching that holds this fabric sandwich together, and some are, well, as simple as tufting, which is just to put a little piece of...
Tying, yeah.
Tying, mm-hmm. it's called tying,
yeah.
to put a piece of yarn every... 3 inches in
right.
each direction to hold things together. And some are, these days, machine done,
mm-hmm.
which
oh,
are fairly straightforward diagonals
yeah.
or straight across. And then some are very elaborate shell patterns or...
Some are just plain cloth, whole
yeah.
cloth, we call it, and then with just a
quilting pattern.
Quilting pattern on it.
Yeah, this is a real simple on the back of this quilt. It's a grid-type pattern. And
but it's hand-done.
It's hand-done, yes. And on this one, it's a baby quilt for my youngest, and you can see the hearts and
right. there,
the flowers.
For our audience, there's a pattern. It's like winding branches with hearts coming off it,
mm-hmm.
it that could be
and
also sort of leaves.
And a heart within a heart. And
very elaborate quilting pattern, and also some piecework, but the quilting pattern, the stitching itself, is really more elaborate than the piecework on that
mm-hmm.
particular quilt. And so some pieces, it's the piecework with thousands of
right.
pieces, and some it's actually the quilting, and some, of course, have both.
Right. And then some like this have quite a bit of embroidery work to highlight different
yeah.
features. This bird quilt that's made out of bias strips.
We have a very attractive quilt here that we're looking at with a whole variety of birds, cardinals and chickadees and hummingbirds.
Robins.
Red-winged blackbirds. I don't see.
So you can combine, and at the fair, which the guild sponsors, we have all these things broken down into categories so that each quilt is judged against ones like it, if it's an embroidered quilt or if it's an appliqué quilt or a combination pieced and appliqué or whatever.
So there aren't any hard and fast rules, which is a nice thing about quilting.
No.
It's whatever
Only
strikes you.
Only hard and fast rules is that there are no hard and fast rules.
Well, that's very freeing, you know.
And it's fine to do it by machine. You know, there a lot of the rebirth, you know, was hand only, hand this. But, you know, machine is, you know, very, very acceptable. In fact, you know, when people, you know, stop looking at the end of their nose, they realize that a lot of the old quilts that they're admiring now are machine-pieced
mm-hmm.
and hand-quilted.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly the Amish, they're all machine-pieced and then elaborately hand-quilted, like
Incredibly
you talked about.
So,
you know. So, you know, in today's day and age, when you kind of look back and everybody's being reminiscent, they go, oh, I only do this by hand. And that's very nice, but, you know, that isn't necessarily the old-fashioned way either.
Right. You don't have to be... Oh, audience, I'm sorry. Here, 474-5044. I'm so fascinated, I forgot to tell you. You can call and share your own... I know there are a lot of quilters out in the audience, not only because of the size of the Cabin Fever quilters, but...
Well, a lot of the churches are very active in quilting, too.
So very active quilting community.
We have a lot of group quilts that come through the fair from different groups and friendship quilts and things like that.
Okay, so our number is 474-5044. Please call and share your ideas or ask questions of my guests on quilting. This quilt's very interesting. This is, speaking of group quilts, this is a quilt that with the birds on that we were talking about a little earlier, and it has different names, different signatures on the quilt. So it's each person did a bird block?
Yes, this was a gift to me on the birth of my third child, Gabriel, and it was made by 16 different people. I think there's 16 blocks in it, and elaborately embroidered and then put together and quilted in a group. It was a complete surprise, and it's just I treasure it.
And you didn't know anything about it?
No.
Although you thought you knew all about their quilting activities.
Right, exactly.
It's amazing what you can sneak by when somebody's pregnant.
That's true.
A lot of things go by unnoticed.
Okay, definitely.
474-5044. That is one of the things that's very, obviously from this book, The Quilters, was very sustaining thing. On the frontier days, they had a lot of work. It was a hard life. They had much that they had to do, and I think it was hard for them to justify just purely socializing with hands in their laps. And so that was a way that they could spend time together, the women could spend time together and talk, and also accomplish something that they felt was useful.
Most definitely, and I think even in the in the leisure world in the East Coast, in Baltimore, and your Baltimore quilts and your wedding quilts too, it's the same thing. It's women getting together, and it seems like you have to do something with your hands, and so you accomplish something in the process, and it's kind of it legitimizes it to your husbands too. While we were at a quilting bee today, it's not if you said we just went ate bonbons and somehow they don't. They don't think it's worthwhile. We say, we quilted all day.
That kind of old prejudice about women just getting together to gossip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the men became very involved in the frontier days because everyone needs a day off and a break, and they would get together for the quilting bees, too. If they didn't spend the day quilting, they would come in the evenings for the dinner and the dancing that usually followed. And quite often, it was, I guess, springtime, wintertime, primarily, when they would meet, and it was an engagement party celebration. The quilts girls quite often had a dowry of quilts already prepared by the time they were young women, specifically because they needed warm bed coverings. And so this was just something that a girl learned at a very early age, and was a very necessary part of her training.
It seems from that most everybody, even if their needle skills were not excellent, everyone did learn it.
Yes.
All the women.
Yeah, it was almost a survival. I would consider it a survival.
Because quilts do wear out when they're your source of warmth and other things around too. So you had to constantly be replenishing your quilts.
Your supply.
Yeah. But it has, such warm feelings. You quilts for, bed coverings and warmth and also, new babies and weddings that all evoke good warm relationships and family warmth, etc. And even today, I can understand why the women became so engrossed and produced such beautiful things out of so little in many instances, is because it was one of the few leisure moments where they could sit down and not do the hard, heavy work, and they were able to create something, and they got very, you have a tactile, something that you can hold on to, and it's visual as well, and plus it's a wonderful accomplishment you feel really good about yourself when you complete an involved project like this.
There's just something about quilting, something intrinsic in it that just grabs people, I think. Mm-hmm. I think men when they see it at a shop or an auction, and I think women when they finally pick it up. I know my husband has said, I never would have thought this would be something that you'd be involved with, because I'm always kind of quick slap bang, get it together and off run to the next project. And here I am cutting things into tiny pieces, sewing them by hand or something back together again and quilting. But there's something relaxing about it, and there's a real sense of accomplishment. It's one of the few things I've done that I've really finished things. I have lots of needlepoint pillows that are ready to be made into pillows and lots of things that are left undone, but any of my quilting projects that are undone are definitely in a current state of trying to be done. I mean, I'm maybe doing six or seven things at one time, but they're not just sitting on the back burner wasting away.
Well, it was really it's really clear from this book, these accounts, that it was the act of doing it was very satisfying. Mm-hmm. It was not simply the end
product. Just to get it on the bed as fast as possible.
We have a caller. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. You're on the air.
I can't hear you.
Oh, she can't hear us.
However, my understanding from what I've read is that a lot of the importance of quilting dates back to the fact that women were prevented from expressing themselves artistically and that they used this avenue to do that. And could somebody comment on that?
Yes, I think that's right. The women were prevented from doing things which were considered fine arts. They had guilds, and as Mary Beth and Laurie both said, this was something that was necessary in the home for warmth, and so it was an allowed expression. But definitely, there's a lot of creativity that goes into it, and people were famous, at least in their own circles, for the patterns that they invented. Mm-hmm. There's some really elaborate patterns, some very well-known patterns that, unfortunately, probably mostly anonymous inventors of these patterns. But
yeah, I think so. And, well, it's amazing what you can do with just a set of templates of 3-inch squares and triangles. You can create, you know, maybe 50 different, you know, known patterns, plus any number of ones you make up. So, you know, then those, they were basic ones, and who knows where they came from.
Yeah, I do think that this is one of one of the byproducts of the women's movement, that they have elevated some of the more traditional women's.
Well, now things are copyrighted. You know, if you look in a quilting magazine or
yes,
whatever, the patterns are copyrighted. And, yeah, that's very different than for centuries being passed down from in newspapers or by friends or whatever, that now people claim and basically sign their name by copywriting things.
Mm-hmm. And minimizing the ability, I think that in some ways the ability that it took to do good quilts was minimized, except among the circles of friends that really would acknowledge, oh, Sally is a very fine quilter, and it was real clear reading this book that they felt that there were certain people, certain women in their group that were especially.
Yeah, it's still true today. You know, certain women have certain status among their peers, their quilt making peers, as, you know, to their abilities and their creativity.
I honestly don't know if there were, you know, quilt shows in the 1800s, you know, like we do today. I mean, they considered it an art show. I don't think so, but there must have been some gatherings, because you hear of, like, you know, that black lady who had that beautiful quilt that a lady drove, I don't know, 30, 40 miles on horseback to go by. So somehow they got to be known.
Yeah,
so there must have been some way of
that,
some of these fantastic quilts.
Today we have nationally known quilters who do nothing but make quilts and lecture and tour. And we've had several of them in Fairbanks already, which our guild sponsored. A gal from Kansas and Chris Edmonds, and then a gal from the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, that's their livelihood, and they are featured quite often in quilting magazines. They have put out books of their own, and they're really quite well known among quite a few people.
Yeah.
Are you listener? Can you hear this? Have you heard
yes,
this?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, good. You have anything to add to that? Are you a quilter?
No, I'm not. I'm just interested in the fact that women should be allowed to express themselves artistically, and I think quilting is important for that reason.
I agree, and it should be recognized. I think that's very important. I think many women have expressed themselves artistically, but it hasn't been recognized. And that's been one of the real problems.
Glad to hear that quilts are now being fined. I think that's important, too,
mm-hmm.
And for both women and men.
And the price is being paid for them that they really deserve, that acknowledge the number of hours and the effort and talent that goes into them. I remember I was
Maybe somebody else would like to call in. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for joining us.
I still think they're undervalued when you consider the time involved, because you're still talking about antique quilts and modern ones still in the $500 and $800 area. And
that
and
doesn't
I know, you know, when you're talking about 1,000 hours and something, that doesn't.
Well, that really, that's typically true of all.
Done.
Well, it's true of all art. In fact, it's very difficult to put a price
cottage
on it.
Most
art doesn't really get up to the value that a lot of people think it's worth until the artist is dead. Once a piece of art is sold, it's forever lost its earning capacity for the artist, him or herself. It's difficult to put a price tag on. I know I was telling you before the show started, when I lived in the Southwest, I traveled to a lot of flea markets. And at that time, which was the early 70s, they were still very reasonable. Well, reasonable. They were sort of giveaway things. I mean, people would have a sort of traditional collectibles, depression glass and this and that, and a stack of quilts, and you could pick up some very nice quilts, $25, $35, $45. Yeah. And really, I feel bad because one of the things that I did, because they were so reasonable, my sister and I bought them, but then we just threw them on the bed. We loved them, but we also just threw them in the washing machine, and some of them were very old, and certain parts of the material would just go. A piece of red that was throughout the quilt would just disappear, and the cotton batting would be there, and that little piece of red, wherever that had been in the quilt, was gone.
Red was an especially difficult fabric to obtain, a really good red with a good dye in it.
And so, really, our quilts, many of which probably had been in attics or in trunks somewhere that were fairly good condition preservationally when we got them, are really not anymore, and I should have...
Well, that's one of the functions of our guild. We're an educational group, and we have had programs on quilt conservation and how to take care of them, and we've got information in our files. If anyone is interested, we're glad to pass along this information. If you do have old quilts that you're concerned about keeping them in top form, just let us know.
But I think it's wrong not to use quilts, too. I think, the idea that, you could have treated them a little bit better, but that you loved them, and they should be on your beds, and they do wear out. They're made of fabric, just like clothes wear out.
Right.
But if you treat them properly, they last for years and years, and maybe you put your finest one on top and then some others to keep you warm. But if you don't use them, which I think is a mistake some of us make, they're only in your closets. That's not what they were made for either.
No, that's true. And that's why many are in fact, gone now, because they were used by the family, and they were... And that's just
and
inevitable.
The idea is to keep making quilts so that you have a continual supply that never runs out. But I think it is a mistake that some of us make, and I include it. I know I have some too that I don't use, or some that I have old ones that have been misused, and the bindings and stuff are coming off. So you love them at that stage.
You see these sleeves on the back of these quilts. I hang these on the wall.
I was going to say actually they do make very good wall hangings, unless they're really.
And I myself, that's what I tend to do. It's a size I can get done, whereas a full-size quilt sometimes takes a little too long to get done. So I tend to do wall hangings.
Our number is 474-5044. I think it's difficult to put a price on a lot of crafts. The endless hours that go into this, it's just really staggering. Of course, you feel you're doing other things at the same time, talking to your family or listening to the radio.
It's one nice thing. I quite often sew in my living room. I have my sewing machine set up there. And with three kids, there's somebody always wanting to talk to you or having a question or that you just need to be around. And this is something that you can do and you're around and you can listen. You don't tune everyone out. And the quilt frame can be set up in the middle of the family activity area. And you don't feel like... that you're not producing anything either. It's great. I think it's extremely therapeutic for mothers, and I can see why it's been done without any interruption. Over the centuries, women are still doing it today.
Well, because in some ways, I'm not saying it isn't sometimes true of men's work also, but women have the frustration of feeling that what they do gets undone almost as quickly as they do it, whether it's cooking meals that get eaten or...
It's been 3 hours cooking dinner and it's gone.
In 15 minutes. Washing a floor, which then is tramped across.
Yes.
And no one even notices. So it's nice to have something that's tangible.
I think one of our renowned quilters that came, Chris Edmonds, Chris Wolf Edmonds, the one from Kansas. I think she did a lot to to change some of our minds about. She said at 9 o'clock, she went into her studio and did her quilting till 3 or 4 and then came out. If the dishes weren't done, that didn't matter. At 9 o'clock, she, you know, it was like her job, and that's what she did. She made her living from it and whatever. I think a lot of dirty dishes are left a little bit dirtier around some of our houses once a day instead of after every three meals. But, you know, again, because it's like you said, you feel like you're constantly doing nothing but washing dishes. Or floors.
Yeah, I think children look at you in a different light, too, because they're interested in what you're doing. They like the pretty colors. They like the designs they see emerging. And they like just having you around to listen to them, too, without you not moving around and doing something else. I mean, you're sort of their captive audience as well. And, in fact, I was working this summer on a quilt, a machine-pieced quilt that I was trying to speedily finish for the fair. And my 13-year-old... was watching me and asking a few questions, and she said, "I'd really like to make a quilt, Mom." And this is such a simple technique, and I have, you know, the rotary cutter, which I can just zip off the strips real quickly with templates. And I said, "Well, go pick out some fabric. I've got a storehouse fabric." And she came back up with some very nice fabric, and I said, "Oh." Okay, you're my
taste here.
And I let her, I moved aside and let her get into it. She picked out a pattern from one of the books, a simple pattern, and she got underway. And she worked on that quilt for 8 solid days and a couple of nights. And she finished it for the fair. And I mean, mine was far in the background. And I watched because I, having been superintendent of the quilt booth a couple of times, there was no way I could help her out and feel, I felt conscious bound not to. And
right.
This was her learning experience. And she did a terrific job, and she delivered it to the fair 10 minutes before closing. And she ended up winning a blue ribbon on it, and in fact, a junior championship. Well, we were just so proud that she finished it, and she did a very nice job. And it was, you know, these kind of experiences evolve out of this.
I think I have a son who's almost 4, and one of his first words was kilt. He called me kilt. Mommy's kilt, you know. So I think that's kind of a neat thing.
Until it's a priority in your house. I can vouch for your daughter's quilt because I saw that you had it up at the university. And has she quilted anything since then?
No, she hasn't. So when she gets the urge again, I'm sure she will. But she's got that now. You know, that's a real building block, I feel.
That's quite an accomplishment, too.
There's a film that the university owns, which I'm going to show during Women's History Week at the beginning of March. I'm going to show it several times, so anyone who hasn't had the opportunity to see this film, please check in with us and come see it. It's called Quilts in Women's Lives. And that, it's a wonderful film. It's not very long, about half an hour. The thing I think that's interesting about it is that the women who are quilting come from such a variety of backgrounds, and they quilt for very different reasons. They're the two wonderful
sisters,
retired school teachers who are in the process of making quilts for a fairly large family of nieces and nephews and so on, something like 22, and they were laughing that they didn't have a single quilt themselves because all of them were given away, and they do it to keep busy in their retirement. There's another woman there who taught art at the Art Institute in Chicago, and she retires to California to get away from the cold winters.
Yes.
And is going crazy, watching TV, not knowing what to do, and she discovers quilting, and it's like a whole second career for her.
Yes, she was. That was such a delightful film all the way around, and the individual characters. I remember each of them so individually, and I think of that art teacher, and she was just so involved with the color and the shimmering palette of colors that she had on a felt wall board. But each of them, in their own way, derived so much pleasure and fulfillment from it. And I think anyone who becomes involved with this kind of craft, any kind of handcraft, I think, feels that.
The other thing, the show that you had on the KUAC, the TV, the quilting series, there was quilting 1, 2, and 2, but particularly the quilting 2 series dealt with people. And there were some incredible quilters in that from this, I think of Susan McCord and some of these, and when they're talking about their mothers or their aunts or whatever. But it was, again, you were really talking about the people and seeing, you know, how they had expressed what had come about in their lives.
It does give us a sense of history.
Very much so. And like the book says, you know, it's the oral history, or actually it's not oral anymore because it's there on the quilts, but sometimes it's lost because they didn't write it down. It was word of mouth. And if you've ever played the game where you say a sentence or two and have it go around a circle, and at the end it doesn't come out anything of what it started, you can imagine, you know, what the oral history with some of these quilts are.
But there's one woman in the movie who's saying, okay, and this is my mother's quilt, and this is my grandmother's quilt, and this is my aunt so-and-so's quilt. And so, and by looking at the quilt, she's reminded of
the people,
of all these women in her life. And I remember this when she was working on the other thing about, do either of you or do people in the quilting guild, in fact, cut up old clothes and so on?
Yes, still? There are some. I've made a few things with old clothes, and some people do. It just depends on what you want to make, and sometimes that's the only thing you can, you know, sometimes something will just strike you, come right out at you, that you find among your clothes rather than your fabric.
Well, quilted clothes now, I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where things have gone the last few years, too, is they call them people quilts.
And vests and dresses and so on.
And things like that. And so in conjunction with the, there's going to be a quilt show here, and actually a fiber show at the Alaska Land that the Quilt Guild has gotten a state grant for. And in conjunction with that, we're going to have Jean Wells come, and she is in, that's what her profession, teaching profession is, and that's quilted clothing, or she calls it patchworthy apparel.
And when is this going to be?
This is going to be June 84. So we're real excited about that. We're real excited to get the grant because it does take quite a bit of money to put on a show and to go through all the things. So we're real excited. We had to get a tax exempt status. We had to get nonprofit. All these things that the guild had to do to obtain this, and we're real pleased that it all came together over the last year.
And is the show just going to be in Fairbanks?
Yes. Yes.
There's something else that we're doing right now. We have designed, and we're in the process of, in fact, at our January meeting, we're going to be passing out the final designs and fabric for our Fairbanks historical quilt. This is something that I've wanted to do. Well, since the bicentennial, I thought, wouldn't it be nice to make a Fairbanks quilt? And I was just new to quilting at that time, and we were building a house, and it was the last thing I could get involved in. But since the advent of the Quilt Guild, which was organized in 1979, the group has grown so large, and the skills are really impressive now among the members. They're very, really good needle people in town. And so we have worked together a historical quilt touching on Fairbanks history from E.T. Barnett on up to the present. And it is in the close to the working stage now. We've gone through the planning stage, and we plan to be quilting it in the Noel Wien Library. Oh, but we have not set any deadlines on this. It's nice to, you know, it's sort of in conjunction with Festival 84. It just seemed the right time, not really because of the festival, but it just sort of worked into this year, and we might have it almost together by spring, maybe next fall, but we'll be quilting it at the library, and once it's finished, it will be hung at the library.
Yeah, what it is seams of caches and fish wheels. And how many different plates are there? What, 12, 16?
I think there's 12 major plates and then smaller ones.
With wildflowers and fish and things.
All
like
sorts
that.
Of things Every, relating
to
the area.
Trying to represent everything, yeah.
Audience, our number is 474-5044 if you'd like to call and join in. How long will it take you to quilted at the library? I was real curious. It seems that some of these people, when they get together to quilt, are very quick. Quilt a quilt in.
Well, this is a very large quilt, and it's going to take some time. It'll probably take a matter of a number of months. It depends on how many people go to the library and how often. I really don't expect it to be finished before the winter of 85 sometime. It's a good time to quilt and get together for quilting is after Christmas because people have the time. They're not making Christmas gifts. Quilters always make a lot of their Christmas gifts. And it's cold and it's nice to go into a warm area and sit with your friends and quilt.
Summertime seems to be the real slack time, even in the guild.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you're trying to be outside and be with your family and do all the things you need to do in the summer. So
garden.
Yeah.
When you want to be outside then. And really, we are forced very much indoors in the winter here, and so it's a very good thing to be doing in the winter.
And quilted items just warm up the house, you know. And not only do they physically warm, just the color and the designs, I think, add a tremendous amount of warmth, too.
People must have to be very ingenious about where they keep their quilting frames. For the audience's reference, I don't know, there may be a variety of quilting frames, but the ones that hold the whole quilt are...
Mine's in my husband's den.
They're sort of like picnic tables without tops. Right. I mean, they're fairly large, and they have...
they're the size, legs. They're at least the width of a bed. They have to be, you know.
Okay.
So that's, you know...
So they used to keep them on the ceilings.
Sometimes they were suspended from the ceiling, so they could...
And lower. Pulley-type apparatus, yeah.
That's very common.
You can quilt a whole quilt in a hoop, such as the one that Laurie has here tonight, a large, what's that, about a 24-inch?
That's a 24-inch, yeah.
Hoop, and just move it from section to section. You can do the quilt-as-you-go method, where you just quilt one block at a time and then overlap and sew them together. Some people quilt without any kind of frame or hoop at all. I prefer to use a frame because it makes it taut, and I think you can... It looks nicer with the finish.
I can't imagine dealing with all that unwieldy amount of material and that.
It's nice and warm to have a quilt over your lap, though, while you're quilting, if you do have it.
That's why it's not very good in the summer. But,
When you have guild meetings, do you have quilts on quilting frames, and do you work on quilts at your meetings? Or
People work in individual projects. There's always show and tell at the beginning of the...
A typical meeting is we start at 7. It's always the third Tuesday of the month, and during the school year, it seems to be at Ryan Junior High, and we have a show and tell for a half hour, and that's you bring what projects you're working on. They don't have to be completed. They're just, you know, because it's an inspiration to see, like, what Mary Beth's doing or something. And then we start a formal meeting, which, because we are an organization, we have to have, you know, minutes and treasurer's report. Then we usually have a program, and that's why it's for quilters of all different levels, because it's either on Amish quilts historically, or it's on new techniques that have come up, or mitering corners, or so it's anything from actual hands-on learning something to, you know, preserving quilts or whatever.
So a lot of information is given.
Very much.
But you don't quilt the people informally, the women.
They work during the meeting, and then of course, you know, if the program is on applique or mola making or something, you bring your materials to do that. And that's what's difficult with being president is that I never get to bring my stuff to the meeting to work. I have to sit there with an agenda in front of me and keep things going. And our secretary last year was she came to the first meeting of this year, and our other secretary couldn't be there because her son was sick or something, and I said, "Oh, Delaine, can you please take the minute?" She said, "I just brought this tonight so that I could enjoy myself." And here I had to do the minutes again. So.
We do meet weekly, though, for sewing in each other's homes, and that's on Thursday from 10 to 3. In the homes, it's quite often at the same person's home, but it varies now and then. In the summertime, we meet all around town because people's driveways are easy to get in and out of for those who live out of town. So there is a constant exchange and constant learning going on among the membership.
But a frame isn't something you can take up and take down, so it has to really stay at someone's house. So that's why it's fun to go in different people's houses.
You did a project. Mary Beth works at the museum here at the university, and the employees of the university of the museum got together and did a project.
We did that. It'll be 2 years this spring. Our exhibits and public service coordinator and our exhibits designer were being married, and they're both good friends and nice people, and we wanted to do something special for them. They went outside to Colorado to be married with family, and in the meantime, I had thought of a quilt, but I knew what a huge project it was, and I really didn't want to get involved with a bunch of amateurs and doing a great big huge quilt. But that was the feeling was, oh, it would be so nice to do a quilt. I said, okay. The museum is a very fertile ground for finding designs, and it was quite easy. Within a week, I was able to pull together. Some of the designs were designs that the bride had done for our banner patterns in the museum, those lovely banner patterns we have. And we now sell the pattern to it, in fact, because of the quilt. And then I just pulled out designs from here and there and worked them up, and then brought a backpack full of fabric into the museum and let people select their designs and then go through and pick from these fabrics. And I showed almost all of them how to applique, because this was an applique quilt. And I would take 10 or 15 minutes to show a few at a time or one at a time, whenever they could pick up. We had graduate students, we had the whole office staff, we had the exhibits people.
The docents.
And the docents were involved in this. There were 20-some blocks in this quilt. And within 3 weeks, I had all the blocks back beautifully done. I was so impressed. One gal who doesn't even hem her own skirts or slacks did a...
Iron on tape.
did a beautiful job. And we put it all together and presented it to them at a reception that there was in Fairbanks, and then brought it back to the museum, put a batting and a backing on, and I brought my quilt frame in, and we had a living exhibit right in the lobby.
Yeah.
It was terrific. And we set up the quilt on the frame in the lobby, and people would rush out during their breaks, and they would rush out, eat their lunch quickly and rush out and quilt, and they even stayed after hours.
It's very impressive.
And docents came in, and members of the guild came in, too, to quilt, and we had a wonderful time with it. We made a postcard out of it for the Quilt Guild's show of two, it'll be a year and a half ago. And the quilt was hung in that show, and it also hung at the museum for a couple of months.
And it's beautiful puffins. And
yeah, mm-hmm. It was a great experience. We really enjoyed it.
And we're about to have another one in Fairbanks. If people miss that one, they will be able to participate or watch at the Nolween.
Yes, definitely.
And that's very exciting.
Yeah, it is. That's a hands-on type thing. is much more exciting than just looking.
And that quilt should be, in fact, in some ways quite similar, I mean, in terms of it being local.
Yeah, of a local origin and local scenes, yes.
And picture quilts like that tend to be applique. That's how mm-hmm. you get the, you know, design it. So this one, too, will be an applique.
Yeah.
And with each block being different.
This Fairbanks quilt is even going to be more elaborate than the
museum
quilt.
Because you're starting with all experienced quilters
yes.
rather than people that you're teaching on the job.
Yes. So it's really going to be a swell quilt.
Just a comment about your name, Cabin Fever Quilters. Obviously, that comes from the fact that it's somewhat of a solution to cabin fever. You were, I don't know whether it was you, Mary Beth, or someone else who was telling me that they don't think they would have lived through the first few years in Fairbanks if they hadn't had quilting as a hobby. They had young children in a cabin, and that it was
yeah.
a real...
I know. I don't know.
It must have been someone else.
I had said that because I really didn't get into quilting until I was into a regular house, but I did have young children in a small cabin and no running water for a number of years. And I had quilt books to look at that time. It's before I actually got into the quilting, which I've spent hours looking at my quilt books.
I do.
Visually, they're wonderful. But with raising kids, it's the perfect complement, I think. You feel...
What I like about the guild, per se, is that you meet people from all different walks of life, all different ages. Mm-hmm. And so where you tend to, you know, normally maybe just have friends your age or something like that, you really, because we're away from our families and away from old communities, you know, it's the first I felt really part of a community
yeah.
because
it's,
I know so many people from all different walks of life, ages, you know,
yeah.
younger, older.
It is terrific. I've met people through the guild that I would never have had any contact with otherwise. And it has been a very enjoyable experience.
And I remember I had one gal come up from Anchorage to see our quilt show last time, and I'd never met her before. And, you know, she stayed at our house, and it was like we were instant friends, because instead of spending days talking about the weather and talking, you know, very generally, we just got right into it, you know, because, you know, you shared such a deep feeling for quilts and mm-hmm. like that you felt like you were friends to begin with, and you didn't have to kind of pussyfoot around and say all the noncommittal...
Yeah.
You know,
that's very true. In fact, it's a phenomenon. We were talking about how the resurgence across the country with quilting. Every year, there are notice upon notice in the quilt publications around of quilt shows. I mean, there's just hundreds of them across the nation nowadays. And also, there are at least a dozen major quilt conferences where the big name quilters we were mentioning before, who make their livelihood from quilting and designing quilts, lecture and give workshops. I went to one in 79. It was an incredible experience. After 5 days, I was quilted out. I think that's the only time I can really say that. I wanted to talk to regular people again, more normal people. But it was a great experience at the time. But it was a complete quilting.
I kind of walked
experience.
Into something like that this summer. I thought it was just a quilt show. You know, that's what I got from the paper, and I came in, and it was, you know, there were lectures every couple hours that were covered with your $4 admission, and had to be well over 300 quilts exhibited. Plus, there were, you know, all the latest and new equipment and ideas. And then the fashion show of just the visitors there was, I could have just snapped hundreds of pictures of these beautiful clothes and quilted things, and it really, I came out just kind of walking. it was really a great experience.
Yeah. Imagine 5 days of it.
Oh.
It was an immersion.
A real icebreaker, something that people can start talking about, and they can lead
instantly
to all kinds of other kinds of conversations. And I think this woman, whoever I talked to, it was a way that she could get out of the house and feel that she just wasn't going to somebody and complaining, but had a sort of way of opening the door and making friends and something to do and something that she could work on at home and stop when the kids needed her attention.
Yeah. It's definitely, you can especially see that it's great for the young mothers that come in. My children are on their way, you know, have been growing, but I really empathize because I think Alaskan winters are deadly when it comes to being indoors with young children all the time. You really do have to get out and do something and have another interest and in order to be a good mother, you know, and have a happy home life. And it's real important raising kids. This is one really excellent way to do it, where you feel like a whole person.
Mm-hmm. Something to do with that long, stifled creative ability. A lot of these women in this book, they really say, "Well, I don't do much. I don't have much creative ability." But it's obvious when you look at the quilts in this beautiful book that that's quite untrue.
Yeah, and so I think that's a typical, you know, sex bias that we grow up with too. Like, you know, like you
what you I say, do is not important.
I don't do a very good job. And then you see this quilt behind them, you think, you know, they don't think they're artistic. They don't think they're talented.
Right.
You know, who says?
Right.
I think women quite often are self-deprecating for no good reason. And it's upsetting when I hear that. I don't like to hear women say I'm not good at doing anything, because they do some of the most tremendous jobs needed to be done.
Or they say, I'm not good at math, I can't do that. And if you've ever, you know, really dealt with some of these templates and some of the designs that people have come up, or with borders that totally go around where the design doesn't end and another one start, I mean, you know, they may say that they're not mathematically inclined, but someone along the line had to have figured out, and whether it was paper folding or whatever technique they used.
Very complex.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Very
and
much so.
Really geometric, adding all those little teeny pieces together and making
Definitely.
Sure they come out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, part of that, I think, has to do with the fact that we don't, that in our society we partly value things based on the money, the dollars and cents figures that we put on things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us to estimate or to value things that don't have high dollars and cents. And the traditional women's work and talents have not had a high market value. Although there's a lot of books that say if you try to replace the work that the average woman does in the home, never mind what they do outside of the home now, it would come in a fairly high price. But it's not even viable, actually.
No, there's a lot of it that isn't viable. You can't buy love, you know, the mother raising children and a lot of those necessary ingredients.
And so I'm really pleased to see that these skills are getting a lot of attention and are coming up in value, although as you pointed out earlier, I don't think that we really got to their true value.
No.
But
at least they are starting to become in the forefront and talked about as art, and it's almost accepted now, you know, which is a real novel.
Now that there are quilt shows in museums, major museums around the country, it shows that it definitely, they're starting to take them out of their storage areas and put them on display, which that is just in the last 10 years that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some beautiful quilt shows around the country.
Yes, I saw that one with Amish quilts, and just the colors were extraordinary. And I don't know whether I said this before the program started or not. That's the problem with talking before the show starts. I don't know what. Because it was in the Modern Art Museum in New York, well, actually it was in the Whitney, it was in the next room to modern paintings, and it was really obvious that they were exactly in the same league, and in fact some in some ways surpassed.
Especially the Amish, you know, I mean, they didn't have the touch with the outside world, so it really did come from inside someone's head and just what they dealt with and real expression, real artistic expression.
The colors. Brilliant, brilliant colors.
That was the only way that they were able to use those bright colors, because in their own clothing, they used very somber colors. And
their undershirts, I think, were those colors.
Were
their,
they?
Their, was their exterior clothes had, were the other, but their their shirts and things were all these bright, bright colors. Yeah, and their petticoats, I assume, or something. It was real interesting. Yeah, what lurks underneath.
Well, luckily, we have ample opportunity in Fairbanks to see the quilts that all of you are working on. And I hope to do something with the quilters for Women's History Week at the university here. And we have your other show coming up at Alaska Land in June. And for any of you who are out there who would like to see some of these quilts or have an interest in quilting and want to learn a little bit more, you can go to the Cabin Fever Quilters meeting, and again, where is that?
It's the third Tuesday night of the month at 7 o'clock at Ryan Junior High. It's now in the Teacher's Lounge is where it is. There, you know, you can, it's usually in the paper in the City News, or you can give me a call. Or
do you have a phone number that people, if they're curious, could?
They can call me at 479-6557.
Okay, 479-6557. If you have
and
curiosity.
They'll see, we're going to have brochures around for the guild and stuff too at some of the shops, so it'll be they'll be able to find us. And that's again what this quilt show is Quilts as Art. It's actually called Festival of Fibers, and it's for all different fiber arts, but we call it art, and that it's a real big point we think we're making with this. This is definitely an art show.
And how long, you said that you, Lori has only been quilting since 1980, and Mary Beth since?
About 76, 77, something like that.
Okay, but not all that long, and I can assure you who are not in the studio with me that they are experts. So it's not too late to learn.
Never.
No, it's never too late. Never
and there isn't any appropriate age for quilting. It's they used to start very young, and
I just got my mom started, and, so it's never too late.
And didn't stop until the last needle was threaded.
That's right.
Even had some, they were talking about some of the young kids had to come in and thread the needles because the older women couldn't, they could still quilt, but it was getting hard to thread the needles. And I suppose those, some of the farmhouses were poorly lit. So, well, thank you very much. I love talking about quilts. I love seeing them. It's been a real treat for me to watch them working here. I've had the idle hands here, but they have been accomplishing lots of things.
Well, thank you very much.
Come back anytime. This has been the Home Fires Radio Show. I think we're going to be preempted next week by the statehood celebrations, but then we'll be with you again. Our producer has been Carla Tanella, and my name is Patty Kostelic, and I will see you. No, I won't see you. I will be talking with you again on the 10th of January on Tuesday evening. Keep warm and have a very happy New Year.